This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Raise Your Game and my name is Tasha Fusil. I'm with Raymond Gabriel, the Executive Director of People Systems Consultancy and author of the book Money Quotient. We had Raymond on last month to talk about our financial habits or lack thereof. But of course, it takes time and the right kind of guidance to develop good financial habits. So he's back with us again, this time for a series called Building Financial Intelligence. We'll be taking a more in-depth look at what anyone, young or old, can do to cultivate some financial know-how. And a lot of what we'll be discussing every Wednesday of this month will be based on the good information that's in Raymond's book, Money Quotient. Now, it's the first episode today, and we're going to be talking about...
We'll talk about, if it's okay with you, Tasha, debt management, investment, and economic cycles, basically, and how they relate to investments.
Okay, so that sounds... For me, I'm not too sure what that means at this moment, so we'll be finding out more about that. And we'll start off with my first question, which was the difference between good debt and bad debt. You talked about this in the book. Can you explain what the difference is between the two?
First of all, the concept of debt, it's not a bad thing. You know, people think that debt is a bad thing, but debt is actually a tool. Good debt is basically something that you borrow money for, which is an appreciating asset. For example, if you're investing in property, if you're investing in land, these are things that can appreciate in value. And if you take out a loan and you take out debt to finance that, that's actually good debt, because in the future, your investment is going to be much higher than even your loan. Bad debt is when you buy depreciating assets. For example, you take out a cash advance to go on a holiday. It's gone. There's no value in it. It doesn't appreciate at all. And you basically lose money. For me, that's the difference between good debt and bad debt.
But then there's also that danger of good debt becoming bad debt if you make the wrong kind of investments.
I think so. The problem with that, I think, is your capacity to repay. I know people who take out a lot of loans and they buy a lot of properties. You don't own a property until you've fully paid for it. And people don't realize this. And if you have like four or five properties and you're relying on your tenants giving you a return on it, what happens when you lose three tenants? How are you going to repay those things? And when you get stuck and then you get into a situation where you can't pay back, it becomes a non-performing loan, you get a bad credit history. So you do get into trouble. But generally, I think you need to borrow what you can afford to pay, finish paying off one investment, then go for another. It's basically not having greed, I think.
Okay. Greed, I mean, that's obviously one of the reasons why people go into debt. What else causes debt?
We can avoid bad debt, firstly, by looking at borrowing to achieve wealth goals, not to achieve lifestyle goals. You know, if you are, you know, someone who wants to have a nice car and you're borrowing money to have a nice car, that's not someone who's got high personal intelligence when it comes to finance. But if your goal is to become a multimillionaire, then you buy cars that you can afford. You buy secondhand cars. You're making purchases with a goal in mind that I want to become a millionaire. I want to have $1 million in cash in my account. The second thing is, a lot of people nowadays, they take loans and they take a long time to pay it back. For example, if you take a housing loan and some banks give you 30 or 40 years to pay it back, do you know that in some cases, you end up paying sometimes three times the value of your home that you are borrowing? You know, so you borrow 400,000, you can end up paying about R1 million on that 400,000. So the key to avoid bad debt is to pay off your loans faster. Put in a bigger deposit, for example. If you can save, put in a bigger deposit, take less of a loan, finish paying it off faster, you actually end up saving huge amounts of money. The third thing that I want to talk about is understanding you need to borrow for needful purchases. You don't borrow for things which are not needful. I'll give you an example. We all need a house, we need a car, and we need maybe some educational loans or something. Those are needful things because we do need to upgrade ourselves. However, many people now, they use their credit cards for holidays. They use money for depreciating assets. They use money for things that do not increase their wealth. And that's dangerous. They shouldn't do that. And the last thing that you should look at is your debt-to-income ratio. Your total amount of debt shouldn't be more than 40%. For example, your car loan, your housing loan shouldn't be more than 40% of your income. Why? Because you need to have cash that you put aside to grow capital for investments. If all your money is being used to pay off debt, what are you going to invest in and how are you going to grow your wealth? You know, so these are some things to think about to avoid bad debt, actually. People don't think about loans as something they have to pay back. Sometimes people think of loans, even credit cards. A lot of people get into credit card debt. They think of it as money that they already have in hand. It's not cash in hand. It's a loan. So you have to pay it back. many times people are tempted to use that money because they said, hey, it's a good deal. I want to get this or I want to buy this. And they don't think about paying it back, or they don't think about the consequences of paying it back. And they don't even budget for paying it back. And those are situations that get you into bad debt. Other times, people get into bad debt because they're sort of living on a fault line, like a financial fault line. They just, whatever they earn, let's say, for example, they earn about 3,000 ringgit. It's just enough to tide them over for the month. Now, if there's an emergency, for example, their car breaks down, their parents need something if you're younger, or you have children who need a certain amount of finances, there's an emergency in the family, that breaks the whole bank, you know, and they get into debt. They have to go into situations where they are desperate for cash, they need cash fast, they have to borrow money, and sometimes they go into situations where they get involved in loan sharks, and those cause a lot of problems. So you need to also plan for emergencies, you know, when you're looking at financial intelligence, and don't get into situations where you get into bad debt because there was a lack of planning. One of the keys is with your income, you got to look at not living within your means, but live under your means. And what I mean by this is if you're earning, let's say, a salary of 5,000 ringgit, you got to live as if you're earning 3,000. And that way you can actually put aside more, you can afford more, you can invest more, and you build up more capital as well.
So that's one way to avoid bad debt. Are there any other tips?
The whole concept of borrowing money to grow, thinking that it's an easy facility that you can get, your mindset has to be that loans are not free money. You know, loans are something that you have to pay back. It's a service provided by banks. And you don't want to get into a situation where there are too many loans that you're living by. And all the income you earn are going towards servicing interest and working on these loans. It's better to buy something's cash. For example, if you can, buy a car cash, because a car is a depreciating asset anyway. The minute you drive it out of your showroom, it's a brand new car, it probably drops in value. You can't sell it for the same price you bought it, you know, because it's a second-hand car now. So it's better to think about purchases in terms of appreciating and depreciating assets before you borrow money for it.
So say we find ourselves in a situation where we really have accumulated some really bad debt. Yeah. How can we recover from that?
The first thing you got to do is you have to be willing to take stock of the situation. Many people don't even realize they're in bad debt. They think things are okay. And somehow or other, the money will come. And I'll pay off. I'm just waiting for the next big contract, the next big bonus. And you got to be realistic. You know, if you are in bad debt, the first thing to do is to recognize you're in bad debt. And this is the thing that I find most difficult with dealing with adults who sometimes come to me and they are in a situation where they have bad debt, their finances are in a mess, but they don't want to release things. They don't want to get rid of that property. They feel, no, if I hold on, you know, a tenant will come. And then they hold it on for 6 months and, you know, they get in even more desperate. So you got to face the reality first that you are in bad debt. The second thing you got to do is make drastic changes in your lifestyle. You probably got into debt because of lifestyle choices. Some people, for example, they live as if they are earning a salary of 10 or 15,000 ringgit when they're only earning 3,000 to 4,000. They go out, they eat in expensive restaurants, they live a lifestyle that's much more beyond their means. And you have to cut that down. And one of the best ways to do that is tracking, which I think we're going to talk about later on. You need to know where your money is going. You know, that's another key point if you're in bad debt. Why is it that you're in bad debt? Where are you spending your money? If you ask people, for example, what they spent on last week, what they spent on yesterday, most people won't be able to tell you because they don't know where their money is going. They don't know what their financial situation is at that particular point in a month. And sometimes people run out of money before the end of the month. And these are all habits that get you into bad debt because you can't afford to pay, so you have to take out the next loan. You keep loading your credit cards on expenses like groceries every month without paying it off in full, but you pay minimum amounts and things accumulate. So you've got to get into the right financial habits. You've got to know, for example, where my money is going. And one of the best things to do is actually to track every cent that you spend. It gives you a very good idea of where your leakages are. You know, some of us, our leakages are our hobbies. And we've got little things that we like to do that eats up quite a bit of our cash, you know. So there has to be a drastic change. And I recommend those people who are in debt, basically track their expenses for 2 months. Look at where your money is leaking, where are you leaking things that you don't need, and change that lifestyle and then start putting money aside to handle a loan. I've got an interesting way of handling loans or debt. You know, if you pay more to the smallest debt that you have, okay, let's say, for example, the smallest debt you have is your car loan. And so you double the repayment. Okay, you pay it off faster. Now, once your car loan finishes, you don't change your lifestyle. You use that extra cash that you have from your car loan, pay the next debt that you have. And if you do that, you keep finishing off bad debt faster. So that's something else that you can do as well. Attack the first one first. Keep paying the rest. You can't not pay everything, just pay one. But then keep looking at compounding your repayments as your debt diminishes. You finish off paying off debt faster. So those are some things you can do when you're in really bad debt.
Okay. How about when you're borrowing money to start a business? What sort of practices should you have in place?
My philosophy is that you should start your business with your own capacity. You shouldn't be looking at using a lot of money to start a business. I know some people think that I need a nice office, I've got to get the latest computers, and I've got to get everything ready and do major renovations to my office so my clients think, you know, it looks great. But I think those kind of things are mistakes. You know, you should start with your own capacity. There's a lot of very successful entrepreneurs who started from their home. They meet clients outside. A lot of clients nowadays don't come to your office anyway. You know, you service them outside, especially if they're bigger clients. People want you to come and meet them. Business deals are done over lunch, you know, over a cup of coffee. So you don't really need a lot of money to start. But I think if you're starting off, you shouldn't be borrowing money for a business, but you should be using your own capacity and use the business to generate income for you. You know, if at all you're borrowing money for working capital or whatever other reason that you feel that you need it, you need to make sure that you have contracts or income in the pipeline that can pay for that loans. Because again, it's not about using that money just because I'm going through a period where there's no income. Your fundamentals are not right. You're not going to get income anyway. And then you end up with a bad debt and a bad business at the same time.
All right, I'm with Raymond Gabriel talking about how to manage debt in the first episode of this month-long series, Building Financial Intelligence. This is Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Raise Your Game. I'm Tasha Fusil, and today we have Raymond Gabriel with us. He's the author of Money Quotient, and he'll be with us every Wednesday this month for our series called Building Financial Intelligence. And we were speaking before about bad debt and good debt and sort of things that we have to keep in mind when we're taking loans or whether to decide to take loans when we're starting a business. Before we go on to the next question, a lot of the things that we'll be talking about in this series is based on your book, Money Quotient.
And, that's right, Tasha.
And it's about developing financial habits predominantly for children, but you say that this book is also, you know, it's not just for the kids, it's for us as well.
Yes, I'm a firm believer in if you want to teach someone something, you've got to model it first. So if parents want to teach kids, they want to teach children finance and the right habits, they've got to be showing their children the right habits first. So I've written this book for families, actually. First, the parents go through it. They probably would have to adjust certain things in their lifestyle or their investments or how they actually go about managing and tracking their expenses and everything else. And once they do that, then they can teach their kids because they have the authority to do so. You don't have the authority to teach people if you're not modeling what you are preaching.
Of course.
Basically.
Okay. Before the break, we were talking about debt, right? What good debt and bad debt is. How do you teach a concept like debt to kids?
You can start by actually giving them a loan. You know, kids ask you for things all the time. They want to buy this toy or they want to buy a phone or depending on how old your kids are, okay, or a new iPad or something along those lines. So you can give them a loan and you can charge them interest and explain to them what interest is and what a loan is and the different types of loans. So use it as an educational tool and do charge your children interest. Don't let them get away with it.
Okay. As a daughter, I'm like, oh, I'd be horrified if my dad had done that to me. But it probably would have been, it would have definitely been for the better.
I think so. I mean, there are things you can do for your kids. You give gifts to your kids. You know, I've planned to give a certain amount to my kids when they turn 24, when they start working. You know, I want to give them enough to buy their first property, to buy their car cash. I've put aside money to do that. And those are things that you're not going to charge your kids with. But it's important for them to understand how the economic system in Malaysia, how generally an economic system works. And if they think that whatever I want to buy, my parents are going to give me, then they will go into the world with that attitude as well. And they might get in trouble because they might look at a credit card as their parent, you know, and, you know, whatever I wanted, you know, that there, see, I've got a new parent now and I can buy whatever I want. It's dangerous. So it's good for them to understand concepts of like interest. They have to pay back, you know, work out a repayment plan. Let them struggle a little bit to pay it back. So they've got to cut their lifestyle because they've taken a loan. These are good concepts that you can teach your children.
Right, because it's going to prepare you for the tough times, especially for times of recession, for example.
That's right.
This leads us to the next question. What do you need to do to prepare for a recession?
If you understand people who are wealthy and who hold on to wealth, they actually choose when and where to acquire their assets. They don't buy houses and property all the time. They know that valuable things at rock bottom prices during a recession. So they prepare for that. You need to have that kind of financial intelligence and you need to understand economic cycles. I talk about it a little bit in the book and how you prepare for what you do in good times, how do you prepare for a recession, and what do you do if entire economic system collapses, something called a depression, you know, and how do you survive in those kind of climates. But just to give you an idea, I think if you're coming into a recession, you need to understand that people who have cash are going to capitalize on assets that are available. I'll give you an example. In the 97 crisis, there were people that I know who bought multi-million dollar houses for about 200,000 ringgit. In the year 2001 or 2002, a couple of years later, those houses were already worth 2 million. But people were desperate for cash, you know, so they're willing to let go of very valuable assets just to get a little bit of cash to survive. And that's how you capitalize on a recession. You need to live a lifestyle, putting aside cash, keeping the recession in mind as a time for you to multiply your wealth.
And that relates really well to what we spoke about the first time you were here, which is about delayed gratification, having to really accumulate that wealth first to prepare for a recession.
That's right.
What can we invest in now in preparation for a recession?
First, you need to learn signs of a recession. Right. You need to know when a recession is coming.
Okay.
Keep yourself abreast with news, economic growth cycles. Like our government says, we are at 5 or 6% growth a year. They've been talking about that every year. Once it reaches 2 or 3% and it's getting into a cycle where it's negative growth, you know you're getting into a recession. So you need to keep abreast. As a person with financial intelligence, if you want to build your financial intelligence, you need to know economic cycles and what's happening. Another good sign would be interest rates, loans, you know, what your central bank is doing with interest rates and loans. So you get online, you can get very good information that tells you, how do I know if I'm in a recession or going into a recession? Just Google it, you'll find out. You need to know that and then start making preparations for it.
So someone who's prepared for a recession is obviously, you know, they're ready and they're in a good place.
Yes.
What do you mean by being prepared for a recession?
There are a couple of things you can do. I think one of the first things is your savings habits. When you do a budget or you do, your own financial plan, it's important to save at least 20%. 20% of your income must be put aside. So, you know, every economy goes through a recession every 5 to 7 years. It's going to happen, okay? It's not something where we sort of pray it doesn't happen. It happens. Every 5 to 7 years, there is a bubble, the bubble bursts, and you go through a period like that. If you understand that, then you need to be working the economic cycles. What do I mean by it? If you save 20% of your income, if you look at multiplying your cash during a boom time, for example, if I buy a property during a recession and I keep it and I wait for a time where there's a good economy, you know, where things are booming, and I sell that asset during that time, you know what happens? I've got excess cash. But what people do is they immediately go and use that cash to buy something else. You should wait. Wait for the next recession, because now I've got more cash and I can buy more properties. I can multiply those assets that I have and keep playing the economic cycles. Buy it at a recession, sell it during a good time. Buy it again during a recession and then sell it at a good time. If you do that, you can be very wealthy in 20 years, you know, playing those cycles. You can start off with very low income and actually get to a place where you're a multimillionaire if you understand this and you know what to do.
Okay, so your advice is don't immediately reinvest the money that you make.
I think so. You got to look at your timing. When are you buying and when are you selling? Wealthy people know this. They know when to get into an investment and when to get out. For example, if I bought an asset now and I got a good apartment, for example, that's giving me good rental, the tendency is, okay, let's hold this apartment forever and let's see how things goes. But what someone with financial intelligence would do is, okay, what's the maximum amount of return I can get on this asset and when should I sell it? So just before a recession, when everybody's confidence is high, that's when you sell the asset. You've capitalized on it. Maybe you've doubled your income. Then you keep the cash. You don't buy another apartment. You wait for the next recession and then you buy another one or another two because things are cheaper at that time.
Relating this all back to the younger generation, how would you then explain the impact of a recession to someone?
If I would to do it to a five-year-old, I would use money and I would explain it in the concept with a concept of showing her maybe a few dollar notes and talking to her about the fact that you have less money during a recession. It's an economic system. Explain to them that governments run our economies. They set fiscal policy. You know, they are in charge of it. Of course, we participate in it. We are all active players in the economy. But we have certain cycles that we go through. and be very visual with kids. I think if you're dealing with young kids, older kids, you can explain to them, I think, a little bit better. But with younger kids, it's important that they see. For example, there are three $10 notes, and during a recession, there's now only one because people have less cash, you know, and things are cheaper. So what do you do when things are cheaper? You know, just take lead them through that and be visual when you explain to them. Make it fun.
Okay. That would be an interesting experiment, I think, for anyone who wants to attempt this with their kids.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I have this belief, Tasha, there's nothing you can't teach kids if you can break it down into steps and simple concepts, you know. Don't give an entire concept at once, you know. Try and break it down, lead them to it step by step. And I think there's no limits to what you can teach kids if you work that way.
Well, we have to wrap up for now, but tune in next week at the same time because in episode 2, we'll be talking about investments and how to make them wisely. Raymond Gabriel, author of Money Quotient and Executive Director of People Systems Consultancy here on Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.